So, we're reading the piece. You can find it on kabbalahmedia.info and in the writings of Baal HaSulam, of course. So, let's take it from the top. An empirical scientific research about the necessity of the work of the Creator. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lay down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion, and the fuddling together, and a little child shall lead them. And it shall come to pass on that day that the Lord shall set his hand again a second time to recover the remnant of his people, who shall be left from Ashur and Egypt and Petros and Cush and from Elam and Shinar and Hamat and from the islands. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalfata said, the Lord did not find a vessel to hold the blessing for Israel, but peace, as we said, the Lord will give strength to his people, the Lord will bless his people with peace. After having demonstrated in previous articles the general form of his work, whose essence is nothing more and nothing less than the love of others, practically determined as bestowal upon others, meaning that the actual manifestation of love of others is bestowal of goodness upon others. Love of others should therefore be determined as bestowal upon others, which is best suited for its content, aiming to ensure that we do not forget the intention. Now that we know for certain the conduct of his work, there still remains to inquire whether we accept this work on faith alone without any scientific empirical basis, or do we also have an empirical basis for this? This is what I want to prove in the essay before us. But first, I must thoroughly prove the subject itself, meaning who it is who accepts our work. But I'm not an enthusiast of formative philosophy, since I dislike theoretically based studies, and it is well known that most of my contemporaries agree with me, for we are too familiar with such foundations, which are rickety foundations, and when the foundation fluctuates, the whole building tumbles. Therefore, I have come here to speak only through critique of empirical reason, beginning from the simple recognition no one disagrees with through proving analytically, separating the various elements into an issue, until we come to determine the uppermost topic, and it will be tested synthetically, the connection and unity between matters such as inference and all the more so, how his work is confirmed and reaffirmed by simple recognition from the practical aspect.
Any questions? What is he talking about?
To prove that the Creator's work, which is bestowing to others, is necessary.
And the only one, really. There's nothing else to do in our existence, in our life at all. Only bestowal to the others is what's required of us. He wants to prove it, not from philosophy, sociology, and so on and so forth, rather from within the laws of nature. The way we can discover them in practice before us. Is that clear? Anyone objects to that?
Shouldn't he start with proving that there is a creator?
I don't know, I'm talking about what's written.
But that's what he says, actually.
He is saying that we are inside of nature. What does it say, creator? What does it say, creator? What are you imagining? You're imagining things.
Он говорит о том, что большинство согласно с ним. О каком большинстве он говорит?
He says that the majority agrees with him. What majority is he talking about?
I don't know. It will be revealed later. Where do you see this majority? That philosophy is one of those saying that we have no clear knowledge, we do it with our corrupted mind. Yes. It's a derogatory word, yeah. Okay, let's go. Meaning, there's no questions here. It's a fact. He wants us to attain. That bestowal to the other is the only thing we should do in our existence here.
The heading, contradiction in providence. Every reasonable person who examines the reality before us finds two complete opposites in it. When examining creation, its reality and conducts, there is an apparent and affirmed leadership of the great wisdom and skill. One, both regarding the formation of reality, and two, the securing of its existence in general. Let us take the making of a human being as an example. The love and pleasure of the progenitors is its first reason, guaranteed to perform its duty. When the essential drop is extracted from the father's brain, providence has very wisely secured a safe place for it, which qualifies it to receive life. Providence also gives it its daily bread in the exact amount. Providence has also prepared a wonderful foundation for it in the mother's womb so that no stranger might harm it. It tends to it and to its every need like a trained nanny who will not forget it for a moment until it has acquired the strength to emerge into our world. At that time, Providence briefly lends it just enough strength to break the walls that surround it, and like a trained armed warrior, it breaks an opening and emerges into the world. Then too, Providence does not abandon it. Like a loving mother, it brings it to such loving, loyal people it can trust, called mother and father, to assist it throughout its days of weakness until it grows and can sustain itself. As man, so are all the animals, plants and inanimate. All are wisely and mercifully cared for to ensure their own existence and the continuation of their species. But those who examine that reality from the perspective of provision and persistence of existence can clearly see great disorder and confusion as though there were no leader and no guidance Everyone does which is right in his own eyes, building himself on the ruin of others. The evil thrive, and the righteous are trampled mercilessly. Bear in mind that this oppositeness, set before the eyes of every sensible, educated person, has preoccupied humanity even in ancient times. And there are many methods to explain these two apparent opposites in providence, which occupy the same world.
Is this clear? Questions?
Ma.
What?
Rav, can you explain those two manners? I don't understand what he's saying.
He says that on the one hand, when you were born, you were spoiled and spoiled. Then you came to a certain age and you started being pressured. Pressured to do this and do that and work and so on. And now you're baffled. Why am I not spoiled as I was in the beginning? Right, Niv? And this is how everyone felt, that suddenly the attitude of their mother and father and relatives and the whole world changed. When you were little, everything's fine, even if I broke something. And now suddenly, everyone starts pressuring me and demanding from me. Why? I want to stay the way I was before. Why is more demanded of me? And nature has arranged our life in such a way that we exist in these two forms. We also see it in animals. In animals, it's even worse. Because after the mother lion, for instance, takes care of her cubs, and after a year or two, they separate. And I don't know exactly how that works, but they as if don't remember each other even. They just go their separate ways, and that's it. And so on, as much as we understand how nature works. So, in the human, it is more, and then on the vegetative level, it's less, and so on. And so, we have two forms of providence of the Creator over the created beings, to the extent that one needs to grow, he's being cared for and loved, so to speak, but once he can begin to make corrections on his own, he starts being pressured and to meet certain demands. And he has to understand that he also has to take part in creation. So you have to go and be successful and make a living and so on. Understood? Yeah. Yes.
But why does a person have to go and settle that contradiction? Why not accept reality as it is?
Of course he accepts it, yes, to accept it. But this reality is nevertheless very strange. Very strange. Why do I not receive from everyone that beautiful attitude that I did when I was little? Well, let's say as much as my parents could provide me with something good, but they wanted to. Why don't I receive from the greater environment when I go out of my crib to my room, from my room to the backyard, from there to the street, from there to the city and to the world? Why, the more I distance from my womb, from where it is mine and it's me and it's close to me, why don't I see the same attitude that I was given from my mother? Why? Why did the Creator made it so deliberately, so that the more I distance from my house, from my source, from my origin, I feel worse, as if no one wants my benefit, no one owes me anything, no one wants anything from me, even the other way around. Other people want my harm. Why is it? Is this a corruption, or it's part of nature? Or it's nature that needs correction? Why do we see these two very extreme opposite attitudes in creation? This is what he wants to reconcile. This is what he wants to say. That these two parts of these two forms of nature that we feel is so that we will complete them. Just as we received love and warmth and tenderness when we were infants, we need to receive the same when we are adults, on the condition that we can give that to others. But we have to make the world just as it was in our mother's crib. That's how the world has to become. And even more and more, because the more I grow, I can no longer just settle for mommy's good attitude and her chasing me to eat something or drink something or wear something warm and so on, but I can certainly relate to the whole world this way, and the world can then relate to me this way as well. That's what he wants to get at from with us, that we'll understand what the correction needs to be from the example we see in life.
It sounds philosophical, but why?
What philosophy?
Well, what I'm trying to say is we're coming out of that assumption that coming out of our mother's home, that was a good thing, and every change from that state begins to be bad. And
well, you don't have any other example. Show me such an example that you're being loved, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter what you're doing. Give me a different example where there, because there you see love to begin with. That works on you. The Creator gives that love in the parents to their descendants. And so the parents are then governed by this love of the Creator. And when we grow, we then have to learn how to continue that love from the same source, from the Creator, to work and circulate between us, across all of humanity, but consciously, against our inclination, with consciousness and understanding.
Why don't we accept the changes as they are? Why don't we agree with the contradiction?
Because we are a will to receive, we're a will to enjoy. And the natural relationship between us that are driven by the evil inclination created by the Creator to begin with, deliberately, this is the creation that is outside of Him, by that we can only feel troubles. What's unclear? Again, I'm starting to not understand you. Ask. These are things that we have to feel ourselves in the best possible way. To feel that we are immersed in love, in concern, in care, that a person doesn't think about himself at all, that he doesn't even feel that he exists, because our existence comes from having to take care of this and this and that, and I don't even need to think about it. That's the opposite of death, that everyone cares for me, but I care for everyone else. And in this way, we rise to the degree of life. What?
Already in the beginning, Bala Sulam starts to send us into thinking in a way that the whole thing is to come to love of others. It's like there's two realities. You either feel love of others or the force of love and bestowal, or you don't quite feel that feeling of love and bestowal. That's his study. He says, let's leave faith. Let's study it in a scientific way to see that all there is in reality is this force of love of others. That's what a person has to come to. And
are you asking something or what? What?
Yes, why in the reality we live in, it's not felt as something that's missing for a person at all. We work for money, for honor, for knowledge, for control, and we don't feel that they're missing love of others.
Because as created beings, we can attain everything from its opposite. If you asked in a simple way, I would answer you right away.
The answer is not clear to me.
We cannot attain anything the way it is. Anything. If I tell you black, you can't understand anything about black. You'll have to compare it with white. And then, through the difference between them, through all kinds of differences, discernments, then you can attain.
How do those qualities, the lacks that are in people, are the opposite? Why are they opposite?
That's why you're created in deficiency.
Why does that say the love for the desire for control or
you still
knowledge?
Don't understand it.
Opposite to love.
You still don't understand it, but all those things are only in order to attain love, the relationship of the Creator to us, and in the same way we have to relate to Him. There's nothing more than that. Everything boils down to the attainment of love. Me for my beloved, and my beloved is for me. That's how it is, mister. Okay? Okay. So, we haven't argued about this yesterday. This is not where we argued yesterday.
No,
yet,
not that
right?
yet. In nature.
Okay, so let's continue.
First method, nature. This method is an ancient one. Since they did not find a way and an outlet to bring these two evident opposites closer, they came to assume that the Creator, who created all these, who watches mightily over His reality, lest any of it be cancelled, is mindless and senseless. Hence, although He watches over the existence of reality with wondrous wisdom, He Himself is mindless and does all that senselessly.
Meaning there's no personality, there's no Him. There are laws that work. Nature. He is mindless, senseless. There are absolute determined laws that, predetermined laws that operate. That's it.
If there had been any reason and feeling in Him, He would certainly not leave such malfunctions in the provision of reality without pity or compassion for the tormented.
Let's go on the roof. Let's take a righteous and a wicked and throw both of them off the roof. Will there be a difference in terms of nature? What will happen with them? Or we'll see the righteous suddenly gliding on the air? No. These are simple matters. We don't need to philosophize about these things. It's very clear to us, very simply, from attaining nature, that there are laws. There are laws that are at work, just like we discussed yesterday. Biology, physiology, physics, whatever. These are laws that work in reality without care for who they work on.
For this reason, they named him nature, meaning a mindless, heartless supervisor, For this reason, they believe that there is no one to be angry at, pray to, or justify before him.
Is that correct or not? Dudi, what? You don't have questions today. Interesting. You will have, okay. Yes?
It wasn't clear yesterday, as you said, everything about it, that's how it is. That according to that method, and is there a law behind each of these methods? Behind every question a person has or in his perception, there's a law behind that, or?
Of course it's based on a law, that from our life, living in a jungle, or on the trees, we see that everything is operated by laws of nature.
Also towards that which people can't explain? Is there a law to that? Or
we can't explain any law until today. And we can't explain any law. Why does it work this way? The electromagnetism, thermodynamics, whatever it is, we can't actually explain in depth why it works. Why does it work? That's how it works. Science doesn't give you the reasons why. It explains the phenomenon itself. A scientist is one who knows the phenomena of nature.
I stopped understanding that. Behind everything, this method puts a law, but it just can't explain why that law exists.
Some engage in that, but that's not really part of science anymore because we cannot investigate it. We can't research it. Why there are such laws in nature is not actually part of science directly.
That's outside of this method?
Today, it's a bit clouded, but yeah, it's basically besides the method.
Can you explain what the answer is to the two forms of providence, the different contradictive forms of, where the first method?
There is no one answer to the two forms of providence, because one is in order to bring up the created being, and the second method is in order to bring him to correction. No. Yeah.
He described a gap between these two forms of providence. He said that the primordials, they invented a method that equalized that gap for them. It solved their gap in this. And he says, nature.
Nature. This is how it is. Yeah.
It's not understood why this settled the contradiction.
Because you have nothing you can do with this. This is nature. You can say, I don't recognize why it's so, but when the particles began to develop from somewhere, existence from absence, I don't know where, these particles began to evolve and shape matter, and laws of matter, and so they then did what they did. Where did it come from? From nothing. From absence. So now you have to believe there is some force, some spirit, some force that doesn't dress in matter, which comes before and gives matter its specific evolution. And that is no longer science because you have no access to it. Here, anyone can philosophize however they want.
Seder.
Okay.
No, matter.
Yeah, what do you want?
This method, nature, the whole world exists as of today under that method.
Right.
Everyone
right,
exists.
Because you have nothing else to rely on. Only the judge has no more than his eyes to judge with, as much as his eyes can see. If you say, I want to research what happened before matter, then you're no longer treated as a serious scientist.
So according to this law, we truly exist this way, every single person.
Right.
And everyone who goes to work knows that's according to that law.
Yes.
So there's no questions here.
No questions, yeah. About the first method called nature, there's no question. Everything's fine. That's why it is so solid and existent, because there's no denial of it. So there's no question about it. No one can come and say that's incorrect. Incorrect? Well, put your hand in fire and see what happens. So see from your experience. Everything is empirical. All right.
The second method is two authorities. Other were more sophisticated. They found it difficult to accept the premise of nature's supervision, since they saw that the supervision over reality to secure its existence is a far deeper wisdom than any human culmination. They could not agree that the overseer over all these is himself mindless. For how can one give that which one does not possess? Can one teach one's friend while he himself is a fool? How can you say about he who performs before us such astute and wise deeds that he does not know what he's doing? That he does it by chance, which it is evident that chance cannot arrange any orderly deed devised in wisdom, much less secure its eternal existence. Hence, they came to a second assumption, that there are two supervisors here. One creates and sustains the good, and the other creates and sustains the bad. And they have greatly elaborated that method with evidence and proofs along their way.
It's already a very unique invention that I distinguish between the good and the bad force according to what I think. It depends on psychology, religion, humanity. It also belongs to my observation of what's good and what's bad. Who knows it's good and who knows it's bad? So about the other methods, there are questions already. But about the first one, it's nature. That's how it is. You can say that about each and every question. Because everyone sees that and everyone understands that's how it works. That's understood?
No, Bill.
Bill?
My question is, what is the purpose of explaining things about the Creator's attitude towards us as if He has a human attitude? What do we get out of this explanation in this way?
The question, the answer is, what does He want from us? What does He want from me? That's what I want to know. If I'm under His influence, then that's how it is. Because He's upper. I depend on Him. If He wants something from me and I don't understand, this could be to my detriment. So I should know what He wants from me. Maybe I can do it easily and then I'll be better off. Maybe I can come to some agreement with Him, do some business and who knows what, get some bonus or something, why not? If He gave me conditions of this yes and that no, then I can already play with that.
In the first, it sounds as if He's given a description of the system that we exist in. It's not anything more than that.
Of course we exist in a system. That's clear to us. Clearly, we live in a system. Everyone's talking about it today already, very openly, that the world is round and all the levels, still vegetative, animate, and human, are interconnected from the littlest degree to the greatest degree. Of course, it's one system, a network of connection. Yes, the question is deeper than that. Everyone also knows that we're interdependent and interconnected and badly interconnected because of our ego. But how can we then get along? That's what's not clear. Meaning we understand what could be the great good world, but how to make it good? How to reach it? What do we do with human nature? That's the question, where that leaves everyone dumbfounded. Start trying to take care of human nature, to awaken people's heart to be sensitive to others, to consider others. That's what our better future depends on. But how? So no one even talks about it. When I read the news and so on, everyone says, oh boy, what will happen here, what will happen there, and so on. But besides finding the negative facts from day to day more and more, no one talks about the correction. Because to begin with, they have this premise that man cannot be corrected. And that's where we're coming to the point where only the wisdom of Kabbalah is what we need. And it has to show that, yes, I got it. There is a way, a method, resources by which to correct human nature, and then the world can carry on and this planet will not explode. And that's the whole thing. That's why we were given access to the wisdom of Kabbalah. All right, what?
He writes that the second assumption is that there are two providers, one that creates and observes the good, and one that creates and observes the bad.
Because we see how good and bad forces are distinct from each other, towards the person or society or humanity. Like, say, how my mother treats me and how my neighbor treats me or someone in the other end of the world. There's a difference, right? That's it. So there's two very distinct forces. How are they different? They're different in their attitude to me, good or bad. There is something in nature that determines one force to be good and the other force to be bad. And so if there is something in nature that adjusts this good or bad, and that director is one, or these good and bad forces work independently, is there one connecting element working behind good and bad? And then I want to know, what's the connector? What activates them? What's the program? Why is it one time good and the other time bad? What is the formula by which it works? What's the operating system? And if not, I just see that one time something good happens, the other time something bad happens, and that's it.
Is that approach where there's one force that operates once towards me in good and one operates towards me in bad is also included in this second method? Is the approach of having one force that once operates good and one operates bad to me also included in this?
This I don't know if he includes that or not. Maybe afterwards, we come to that 4 or 5 or 6 method, I don't know. In the meantime, no. In the meantime, he talks about two authorities. I'm looking at the headline. The second method is two authorities.
What does that mean?
Two authorities means that you have two forces that are not connected to each other. If there was a connection between them, then I don't need to talk about two. Then I need to talk about what guides them, what's above them. So, the second method means two authorities, the good force, the bad force. Now, look at all the belief systems. There is the good, beautiful God and the evil God who looks monstrous. You've seen these things, right?
Yes.
That's it, meaning that we think of these gods that are good and bad. Klipa o Kedusha. Okay.
Also in those faiths that look once at good God and once at one bad God, they say there's one God, and once he's good to me and once he's bad to me.
Maybe. Yeah, we have to look into it. Maybe they also say that above them there is some God, that there is the higher upper force, but we cannot reach it, and that's why we turn to the forces of nature, a tree, a rock, and all those things. And what's above that is too high for me, I have no access to it. And that's why people invented, instead of that upper force, something practical. I take some idol and put it in my room, or some picture, or something close to me. Just like a kid who likes to hold his binky, or blanket, or bear, or teddy bear. That's natural. But thinking about the upper force, that's a question of whether I relate to him, whether I work through the forces of nature to him, or I give a personality to the forces of nature themselves as well. And that's how a person relates to higher forces. Because I can say about all the forces of nature that they are above me. So do I relate to them or the Creator? So we see how they want to mitigate things. How do they make sacrifices, or they put some gifts or a bowl with rice or something like that to the gods, because they can talk to them. They're seemingly closer. However, that higher thing, even if they think that it exists or not, and it's also not for the common people typically, but there's no access to it. What can I do with it? Understood? So, if you want to get along with the upper force, I have access to it. You'll give me something good, and then I'll give you the access, and that is what opens up the whole opportunity to turn it into a business. All right. Shaul, today you are docile. What's going on with you?
Huh?
You already concluded that I'm not going to hear you. Yeah, okay.
Shita Gimel. Shita Gimel hi ribuy
elokuyot. The third method is multiple gods. This method was born out of the bosom of the method of the two authorities. This is because they had divided and separated each of the general actions for itself, meaning strength, wealth, domination, beauty, famine, death, disorder, and so on. They appointed each its own supervisor and expanded the matter as they wished.
That's something we see as well, because each and every force, there's no such thing that it's good or bad. It depends on the time, the intensity, what it does. Can we do without fire? No. But look at what troubles it can make. Can we do without water? No, but what happens when there's a flood or a tsunami? So, you have no force in nature that is good or bad. It's just the extent to which we can regulate it, accept it. So there's always a way to mitigate it, so to speak, and not to upset the forces of nature, etc. That's a whole teaching of in and of itself. So the many gods, with respect to each and everything in nature, you know, it's like you have Poseidon is the god of the sea, and then you have the god of the skies and the mountains, and I don't know what. All in the Greek mythology, it's, you know, you'll find a god for anything. That's understood, yeah? So there's a chance that we'll reach something, yeah.
The fifth method left his operation. Recently, when knowledge increased and they saw the tight linkage among all parts of creation, they recognized the concept and the oppositeness has been revealed in Providence. Out of this, they led to a new assumption that the supervisor of reality is indeed wise and caring. But because of his exaltedness, which is beyond conception, our world is deemed a grain of sand, nothing in his eyes. It is not worthwhile for him to bother with our petty matters, which is why our livelihood is so disordered, and every man does that which is right in his own eyes. Rav, meaning he left his actions. He operated on us, he cared for us, he wanted to come with us to some conversing, to an agreement, to some mutual action. He saw that there is no one to talk to. He was wrong in creation of man, despaired from it, and left. And then we are truly dispelled, thrown. It's very, you can't say that it's not. Look at what's happening. The Creator, can you say that he's good, that does good to start with? He wanted, look what he did. He wanted to teach us all kinds of things. He opened us all the laws of nature, our intellect, our feeling. What did we do with it? We're just using it to our detriment. So what should we do? There's nothing to do if we're not capable of overcoming our evil inclination, and to take ourselves in our hands and somehow understand what we need to do in the eyes of man and the Creator. What can we do? And out of that, we come to a state where of despair. The Creator left us. Let's throw ourselves into life. And today, like yesterday, and that's it. What? Could you explain the difference between the first and the fifth method? It sounds the same. Let it be the same. What does it matter? That's not important. You see how he's giving you in little pieces, this and that, because that's not the point. Therefore, if you want to be a scientist, to scrutinize everything, go through it a few times, do comparisons, summaries. The method is most of humanity engages in what they call science. They believe in science, that that's how it is, and they're checking the laws and trying to work with them. Yes, of course. Which of those methods is the science? Rav says, I think it's the first one. Because the first one sounded very much like the wisdom of Kabbalah. There's a law, he gave it. This is how reality works. Now you're a person, do what you can to operate according to those laws. Yes, but according to nature, you're not being given here a method in which you can bestow in return. You can't give back. You're in a system of laws. Please learn them. Do whatever you are capable with them. That's all a given to you. That's science, no? What you're describing. Yes, that's nature. That's science. How is that different to the wisdom of Kabbalah? The wisdom of Kabbalah gives you a method with which you can change nature, where you're bestowing not upon nature itself, but you're influencing the force, the upper force of nature, which is truly called the nature, God, and you're influencing it in such a way that he changes all of reality and everything together. You from below can influence him.
So, like you said before, the only difference between today's science and the wisdom of Kabbalah is that there is this change of human nature that Kabbalah gives you.
Yeah? That you can add in the governance of God with reality, according to that which you try. You can add his participation, his revelation. He doesn't change the laws of nature. The Creator doesn't change the deed of Genesis, as we call it. But rather, you can come to a state in which you discover the causality, the results, everything that happens, why. The main thing you attain is what we call the thought of creation. To do good to his creatures is what you want to attain, and not so that it'll be easy and nice and good for me. But the thought of creation, because it's what's operates. That's what we're missing.
Humanity gave up on changing its nature from weakness, or what?
It wasn't capable of attaining anything. These are things that a person in our world doesn't touch upon. He doesn't touch it. You see how many laws are being revealed, all kinds of germs and viruses and things. They can discover the connections between them. But above that, the thought, why it needs to be that way, that's already a cause. That's the thought. That's what occurs in a degree above it. That, no. It's like a baby, a little child. He sees what's happening in front of him on the ground. But a little above that, the upper intellect that's causing that to him, why it does that? No. It's not capable. We see that it's a child is not capable. So what can you do? He'll grow up. He'll be able to attain it. It's the same with us. So the wisdom of Kabbalah helps you rise to the degree of godliness, where you attain the intellect that operates.
The only way to a person who doesn't have a point in the heart, making this leap, is just suffering, right?
I don't understand what suffering is to so much. There's those who suffer and there's those who don't suffer. I don't know. It depends from what. When I go to get the purpose of creation, the purpose of life, the Creator, why would I suffer? If I'm working on the greatness of the Creator and I'm connected to it, then I don't suffer. On the contrary, I'm filled with upliftment.
And those who don't have a point in the heart, how do they join the move?
He doesn't join this only as one who operates without any self-attainment. He supports it. Just like everyone uses this world in all kinds of actions, what can they do? Not use it? Not participate? That's how it is in the wisdom of Kabbalah as well. it's considered that they take upon their shoulders the people of Israel, those who want to be direct to the Creator, and help them rise, and by that they themselves merit. That's how it is in the whole world.
So they have no attitude to the upper force, they don't recognize him and never will.
They will recognize it, they shall all know me from the smallest to the greatest, but that's not during the work. Because the Rosh, first of all, needs to do there. Then it becomes a circle. After the end of correction, when the whole Rosh is nullified within the Partsuf expressed there, and there's no more in the Rosh than what is in the Toch of the Partsuf, completely, then the Rosh and the Guf connect together. There's no role for the Rosh at that point. Because also the actions and the thoughts and the plans, it's all done as one. But that's already... Yes?
Rav, you just said now the wisdom of Kabbalah helps you digest the degree of godliness, attain the acting mind.
We have, where is it written, the acting... intellect.
There's an article, The Acting Mind, yeah. So I wanted to ask about this. Here in the first method, called nature, Baruch Salam emphasized a few times that there is nature, and it is not at all have with a mind, it's mindless, it's senseless. Now you said that Kabbalah enables man to attain the acting mind. What is the acting mind, and why is it needed? There's nature that seemingly has everything in it. What's the acting mind?
There's nature, everything is in it except for the acting mind. The mind, except for the thought of creation, the upper force, which is above them, above the laws of nature.
What is above the laws of nature?
Above, since he invented it himself.
Yes.
Not everything?
What not everything?
Who invented it? That there was a thought prior to that to invent all of nature. And that's called the thought of creation.
So this is what the wisdom of Kabbalah adds to this first method of nature here?
This first method and all the methods altogether that people discover is looking at this world. Where a person in this world, out of his weakness in his life, to manage life, invents all kinds of such methods to be able to answer through them on his existence in reality.
And what does Kabbalah add to it?
Kabbalah explains to us that there's an upper force above nature, and that it can be attained, and then from it we will know how everything cascades and for what purpose. Altogether, this method, even nature, does not reveal to us where we're going to, for what we exist. What are all those laws aimed towards? Nothing. Living, dying, that's what we discover. One should not judge other than what his eyes see. You see it, okay, what's next? There is nothing. Upon all those questions, the higher questions, those eternal questions, there's no answers. That's why it's not sufficient for humanity. We see how limited we are, even with our science and our wisdom. We're limited. We say there are other forms of the universe, there's other things, but we don't understand, we don't know, we're limited in our perception in everything. That limitation that we discover helps us somewhat to understand that we exist. We exist in a limited state. Okay? We have no announcements today? No, I mean such that... No? Yes.
Well?
Good day, Rav, World Clean. My confusion is with regards to the structure. He goes here from the third method to the fifth.
I don't know what he wanted to describe there. Whether it was a mistake, could also be. Baala Sulam wrote his things in a not so precise way, I could say. There were many times where he would come to the print shop and they would tell him, there's another free part here, according to the order that we're arranging the book here. There's a... They'd say to him, here, there's this empty paragraph. Okay, so you'd sit there on the spot and write. And then it would exactly collect those letters and put them into the print. Meaning this is... That's why I don't know what happened here that all of a sudden from the third method he moves to the fifth method. I have no idea. Also, when you study the wisdom of Kabbalah, you get accustomed to... You will nevertheless not know out of reading it, or... I saw people that were immersed for years inside other articles and other letters and more, like they filled themselves within 3, 4, 5 years. What... And what? It doesn't depend on how much you absorb the material, but rather to the extent in which you work with the group. This is why it's not the wise that learns. Therefore, so there's no fourth method. So what? It's not missing. Okay. Are you going to read it for us, or will we stop here? Read it. Alongside these methods.
And together with the above methods, there were also methods with regards to the godly unification that it's not the place to engage with.
He certainly doesn't want. What is he, missing trouble?
But this is not the place to examine them, as I only wanted to examine the origins from which the foul methods and puzzling assumptions that vastly dominated and expanded at different times and places were taken. We find that the basis on which all the above methods were born and emerged is the contradiction between the two types of providence detectable in the world. And all these methods came about only to mend that great rift. Yet, nothing is new under the sun, And not only is that great rift not been mended, it grows and expands before us into a terrible chasm, without seeing or hoping for a way out of it.
Meaning we have that same problem nevertheless. The nature's caring for us and developing within our parents a nice attitude towards their kids. When we grow up, we stumble upon a society that is truly coming to ruin us, to destroy us.
Yes. When I look at all those attempts that humanity has been making for several thousand years to no avail, I wonder if we should not seek the mending of this great rift from the supervisor's point of view at all, but rather accept that this great correction is in our own hands.
Meaning stop praying and asking enough, we see that it won't benefit. Let's think whether the solution is in us. According to what we see, nature is whole. And if we want to come to that degree of perfection, then it's probably possible, and not by us asking and praying, but rather we will first do some action between us. We will make of ourselves an integral, beautiful, closed system, and see how from there we can influence the general global nature. Okay? Good, you today. Yes, David.
Rav, to be precise, we can say that today's science is not even included in any of the methods, because we're talking about the matter of providence and the contradiction in the sense of providence. And science just researches phenomena of matter and not the providence and guidance over it.
It could be so, but maybe, I don't know. I don't quite go to investigate all these things.
It's just the methods that he mentions here is how people invented ways to deal with what's happening to them in life.
Certainly.
Do I feel good or bad and why?
That's the only way we operate from.
While science investigates phenomena of matter, not looking for a reason and an explanation for why things happen to us and why they influence us. Not emotionally. Yeah.
Yes, not why.
New York.
Yeah, you're right.
New York.
Shalom Rav. Kama shalot b'shutcha.
Hello Rav, a few questions. Basically, Baal Sulam's conclusion here at the end is not the only one. If you speak to people today, a lot of people will say, like the first method, yeah, there's nature, there's laws, and the gap is completed by the artists who, you know, write songs and talk about the contradictions in life, but we live with nature, something, you know, people are very much used to. Why do you need to jump to Baal Sulam's conclusion? Let's change myself, let's change ourselves and all that. Why not just stay with the first method, nature, and then let philosophers and artists talk about the contradictions in nature?
I don't care what the artists or the philosophers talk about. I want practically to come to a good life. And I have a problem. I have a claim towards nature to depict me and humanity in such a way that not humanity enjoys me and I don't enjoy humanity. And it doesn't give us, not me and not humanity, to be in a good attitude towards one another. And this is a problem. Why is it this way? And to the extent in which I make efforts, I see that it's not working out for me. It doesn't work out. Revolutions, wars, all kinds of forms, nice or not, in nothing I don't succeed. I, a person, one of humanity, don't manage to be with nature, with everyone, even with the people in my home. I'm constantly in a fight, in war. Why is this happening? Why isn't there love between us like it was from my mother to me? Why is nature, as it should be, like a mother, awakening in me all kinds of forms, hatred in place of love? That's what I'm asking. Each person in this world asks this. Look what happens. Look what suffering there is. And what suffering are we standing before that was going to be disclosed? That's why I don't leave this to philosophers and to people of, I don't know, some culture and as such. No, I need this for me, personally, for my matter, for my light and flesh. To me, what do I care what I'm giving out there to philosophers and scientists? When do I come to a good world? I don't see that. I'll say beyond that, who today, specifically in the holy city of New York, lets his child just walk out into the street? They're sitting in their homes? Yes? Well, I want the world to be like I grew up in my mother's home. Why can't it be that way? That's how we are. That's a problem, yes.
Now, when we talk to young scientists, the younger generation of scientists, they do start talking about some sort of a nature and, well, some governing force. You hear them talk about, okay, let's not call it God, but there is one energy and nature, something. There is some expanded way, sense of the first method, something you can better work with. The question is whether they're moving in the right direction, will they reach it, or that in their way they will never reach even some contact.
In my opinion, they will never get there until it will come to them from us. They, with their human intellect from themselves, from the way they're studying in our human nature, reach the upper spiritual force. They can't. There's no connection. There's no intellect in a person to make those connections. Khadira.
Morning, Rav. About the second method of two authorities, it seems like that is responsible for many of the confusions that exist in the world today. And also, as we see in religion, that there is a good force and bad force. It's very hard for people to accept that the Creator is the good that does good and also drives all the evil in the world. It's very tough to get rid of this perception. And so either people find a religious explanation or they completely leave religion. And
the question, please.
The question is, how does Kabbalah teach you to look correctly at this view that the Creator is both the good that does good and also creates all
the evil? Did you understand the question?
How does Kabbalah explain that the Creator is both the good that does good and also causes all the evil?
That's one thing, because it's all divided relative to a person. If a person were to be corrected, he would have no problem with the Creator being divided into good and bad. There'd be no problem whatsoever. The bad will be good. Okay. Now we have Canada.
Да-да, здравствуйте. Такой вопрос. Мы в своем развитии приходим все большему единству, к единой душе, которая сливается в конечном
справедливости. Hello. In our development, we come to a single soul that ultimately reaches adhesion with the Creator. Is the diversity of our self will it not disappear once we begin to be in adhesion with the Creator?
On the contrary, I will find the true me.
Latin America 7.
Mayer. Rob, Una pregunta muy breve, que me confunde un poco. ¿La naturaleza está dentro de la persona?
A very quick question that it confuses me. Is nature within the person?
Nature is everything, and let's say that we're parts of nature. Africa.
Rev, a question here from French Africa. Jean-Louis from Benin is asking a general question. What to do to work more devotedly only for the union of friends? What to do to work more devotedly only for the union of friends?
That's what we need now before the convention. Now we're going out to a whole day till the lesson. And we have other lessons today for the broad public, both in Russian and in Hebrew, from 4 to 5 and from 5 to 6. And until then, also, we need to try to engage in connection. This is to learn articles, to read something, talk about something as much as possible. We have to actually try for the society to convince me that connection is the future of the world, it's my future, and this is how we're going to advance. To truly brainwash each himself through this. Rome.
Questa lezione ho capito quanto ricerco la forza dall'alto. Io ho sempre sostenuto che Aravà sia un posto dove mi riempie sempre il cuore, mi fa vedere la grandezza degli amici, mi annullo completamente verso gli amici. È questa un po' la ricerca della natura che sto cercando di intraprendere attraverso questo studio.
In the Desert Congress, I understand we need to absorb all the force from the friends and connect. Does that mean that we receive a force from above, from nature?
If we connect between us and want the Creator to dwell in us, like Rabash writes to us in his articles about the society, then we are each of us in us with each 10 and with the Creator together, and by that we attain our soul, at least on the first degree. Okay, Rom. Good. So all the rest asked. Well, Niamh, what do you have to say?
Thanks to the TV viewers, and have a good day. And a special meeting with Rav Lightman and the groups from the World Kli. You're invited on Sunday today from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Israel time on KabbalahGroup.info. And today, in the center here, it will take place in the study hall. Anyone can come, men and women, all invited. And the world gathering of friends, we're inviting our friends to the world gathering of friends at 6:45 p.m. Israel time, and connecting to the root of life. Everyone's invited to the World Kabbalah Convention 2020, taking place next week, the next week from February 25 through 27. Go to kab.co.il/convention for details. With this, we conclude. Good day, great night.
חזקים על אותם שערים שסותמים את הלב כל הזמן מפרידים כל הזמן מרחיקים ממי שאת הכל מסובב
מדרגה מדרגה מחזיקים מתגברים ודורשים את הכוח לחזור ופתאום הנולים נעשים לפתחים והחושך הופך לו לאור מעל המצבים החברים שומרים עליך באהבה ביחד מעלים תפילת רבים כולנו באותה כוונה בייחוד הלבבות עד שמלא השיעה כל כדור וכדור שפוגע בלב מעורר ניצוצי אהבה ועוד מאמץ וחיבור הנקודות מעלה מליבנו תפילה ושוב מנעולים נעשים לפתחים ויזרמו נחלי אמונה מעל המצבים החברים